It's time for Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here is your host, the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Welcome in this Friday morning, June the 5th. Game two tonight in San Antonio. Our good friend, our agent from Priority Sports in Chicago, Andy Sheffman, will be joining us midway through the show. What a hockey game last night in Raleigh. Landon Schmidt, I don't know. Doesn't seem to be that you're high on the Stanley Cup Finals. But if you missed this game last night, you missed something. And there was no basketball game on, although there was a good softball game. We'll get to that in a second. Did you watch any of the Stanley Cup Final?
I actually caught the overtime performance.
Okay. Well, whew. The whole game was incredible, really. The last 6 minutes of the third period was incredible. The Vegas Golden Knights controlled this game until the last 6 or 7 minutes of the third period. It was amazing. They were up 2-0. Early on, they were getting outshot, but they really controlled the game. Up 2-0. This is now two games. We're tied 1-1 between Vegas and the Carolina Hurricane. And both teams that lost their games had 2-0 leads in the game. That does not happen very often in Stanley Cup hockey. And then somehow, with an incredible wraparound effort, the Carolina Hurricane make it a 2-1 game. They score right again after that, 2-2. Then there's controversy. A goal that was a no goal gets challenged, and there was goalie interference. And because it was challenged, there's a penalty. And on the power play, where Carolina has been anemic all postseason long, they score. They go up 3-2. Then they get a penalty. And just after the power play, with under a minute to go, it's Vegas that scores 3-3. We go to overtime. What a game! And then, in overtime, power play on a trip on a 37-year-old guy, Stahl, Carolina gets their second power play goal of the game after, as I mentioned, their percentages have been terrible the whole postseason. This was a one-timer that was so beautifully set up and so beautifully executed with a lot of speed. It got past the goalie, and the Hurricanes really must win, tied it up at one game apiece. And by the way, you know, we watched the NBA go crazy. What's going to happen in New York game three? We'll get into that in a minute, but it was so crazy loud. Could you get that sense, Landon, when you were watching this thing in that overtime period, how crazy that place was? And it's going to be the same way in Vegas now.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I love about hockey is the crowds, how rowdy they are.
Oh, it was absolutely nutso last night. So now that series is tied. Both games have been kind of classic. And if we're going to get this the whole way through, I mean, maybe this thing will go seven. Who knows? It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But if you haven't watched any of this, I promise you, if you like sports, you will be compelled to continue to watch it. By the way, in the softball last night, it's over. Texas is the repeat College World Series champions. They sweep Texas Tech. Last year it took three games. This time it was just two. They win back-to-back. Everybody talks about Texas Tech pitcher Najari Kennedy because I think her NIL money was like $1 million, right, that Cody Campbell paid her. And, you know, the truth is it's probably a pretty good investment because it got Texas Tech so much attention. And this team, which, by the way, after they lost last year, recruited All-Americans from all over the place to try to win. I'm sure their NIL budget was higher than Texas, which is hard to believe. But it was. And nobody mentioned a lady named Tegan Cavan because she's amazing. Not only has she won back-to-back titles as the closer, the best pitcher for the Texas Longhorns, she won back-to-back most outstanding players. So she got the MOP twice right in front of Najari Kennedy, who I think is now done, right? Is she eligibility-wise out? I mean, if she was going to get another $1 million to pitch and she had another year of eligibility, wouldn't you do it? Maybe they're waiting to see if you get the fifth year. That could be because they said this could be her last pitch.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was an appeal to be made.
Yeah, we shall definitely see. But, you know, here's the thing. This girl, Kevin, came in for the last two innings. She faces six batters, right? Two innings. She struck out five. She's unbelievable. This little skinny girl, she's amazing, as is Kennedy. So it was really fun to watch. But here's the thing that I always know about softball. It's why the University of Memphis has struggled so much in their quest to get better in softball. I think they had, when Wendy Thies started the program, they had some pitching. But since I've been watching it, no dominating pitcher. That's the key. If you've got a good pitcher that can throw 100 pitches and the majority of them are strikes, and these girls at this level are all throwing in the 70s, you can win. If you don't have pitching, you can't win. All you got to do is look at Kevin, look at Kennedy. You understand why they are where they are. Now, the other players are great. Although I will say Texas Tech, which had normally been incredible defensively, their right fielder really hurt them last night. There was a drop foul ball followed by a line drive that should have been caught. A diving catch was a difficult one, but she was there and didn't make it. Those back-to-back plays allowed Texas to take the lead over Texas Tech, and they do win their back-to-back. But really good stuff. Did you see any of that? It was the crowds in Oak City for this, they're like the crowds in Omaha. I mean, they go nuts over this softball.
Yeah, I was actually able to catch it last night when I was hosting trivia. I got all the sports on the screens.
Ah, I see. Okay, I didn't realize you host trivia.
I do all.
How many jobs?
Everywhere.
How many jobs have you got?
More than I need.
And you're all leaving for Charlotte. Oh my gosh!
Things happen, you know.
Yeah, I got you. But that was fun. Both, because I'm going back and forth on my screen to watch hockey, to watch the softball, and it all worked out pretty well. Tonight, we've got game two. The biggest key for me in game two here, you know, there's the sense that the Knicks stole game one. It's not like, I know there was a 14-point lead at one time in the third quarter. It's not like the Knicks were ever out of that game. And there's no doubt they're clutch. They play great in the fourth quarter. And there's no doubt, and we're going to talk with Andy about this in the next segment, that Jalen Brunson is a clutch guy. You know, there are certain guys. SGA did that last year. He willed his team to win. Michael Jordan, in all the years they won all those titles, when the game was on the line, except for maybe one, either John Paxson or Steve Kerr three, Jordan took every big shot and made every key play. And Brunson is that way. This thing about can a 6'2 guy do it? I guess we're going to end up seeing, but from the first game as evidence, 13 of his 30, and he wasn't very efficient. He had to take 31 shots to get 30 points. But 13 efficiently came in the fourth quarter. And you got to make plays, Landon. You got to make plays. How about they're tied? And there's a missed shot, and he goes high up in the air, tips the ball to Mikal Bridges, then gets the ball back in the corner, hits the three on the way to a 9-0 run that ends up winning the game. He facilitated himself.
Yeah, he did. But I think for me, because if you looked at that game, I don't think either team really played anywhere near their best basketball.
I agree with that.
Spurs did not play very well, and then the Knicks had to figure it out, like you were saying, in the fourth quarter to really get everything figured out. I think the MVP for that game, if you were to give an award for that, would have to go to Karl-Anthony Towns. The way that he came into that game, and you know that he was going to be the guy that had to be on Wimby. He was going to be the guy that had to slow him down, you know, contain his defense, because you're going from a Wimby who struck fear into Chet Holmgren, which was evident, and just rolled all over him, and now Cat's not laying down and going out there and holding his own and doing very well. Sure, maybe his shots and everything else on the stat page didn't look good, but if you watch that game, Cat was the reason that the Knicks stayed in there by shutting down Wimby. So I give him a huge shout-out, and if he continues to play like that, the Knicks shouldn't have really much trouble handling the Spurs.
Well, if we look for keys to this game, that's my number one key, is that
I agree.
Victor Wembanyama's got to play a lot better.
Oh, he does. And I think,
he is 6-for-16 or something of that nature.
Yeah,
he was great at the free throw line.
Well, it's because Cat played defense on him.
Well, you know what? There's two things that are much improved about Cat under Mike Brown than they were under Tom Thibodeau.
Hmm.
And those two areas are, one, defense, where he's actually trying.
Yep, he is.
And two, his ability to be a playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say he has doubled, if you look this up, you might. He doubled his assist totals from a year ago. I think it went from like 3 assists per game to 6 assists per game, something in that area. It was dramatic. So he's become sort of a playmaker beyond Brunson on this New York Knicks team. Wembanyama made a couple of mistakes. Well, one, I think you're right. I think he was not intimidated, but he was worn down by Karl-Anthony Towns. But the other thing is he started drifting outside too much. He's got to stay inside. And if that means they put somebody else on Cat to keep him in there to make sure the lane is clogged and not allow Brunson to make drives – that works for me. Wemby's got to be inside. He's got to be a lot more efficient. And frankly, if we're going to be honest about it, he's got to be tougher. I don't think he was as tough as he could be. Then the other thing is, you've got to put more of Castle or Dylan Harper on Brunson, because you keep Wemby back there to shut down the drives that Brunson is so famous for. Now, he hit the big three. That's a whole different story that broke open the game, in my estimation. But I just – you've got to figure out a way to slow him down. And I hate this about De'Aaron Fox. He's a guy that I've always liked. But he's got a high ankle sprain. He's 70%, 80% of what he normally would do. He's missing easy shots. He can't get the lift because of the injury. He's a half step slower because of the injury. Play Dylan Harper more. In fact, start Dylan Harper. All rookie this year. This guy can do it. You're going to have to do, I think, that. And you just got to be tougher. There is definitely pressure on this game. They cannot lose this game. And they are, it seems to me, sort of a fatigued team, but they're going to have to find a mental toughness to overcome that, and it starts with Victor Wembanyama. I don't think they can win this series, a little bit like the Carolina and Vegas series. Carolina had to win that game last night. You cannot be down 2-0 in a best-of-seven series and lose both of your home games. That's almost an impossible task to recover from. This game tonight is must win. And then game three at the Garden, they haven't been in the finals since 79. They haven't won a title in 53 years. 73, that's the last time they won a title. That place is going to be crazy. Oh, and by the way, I don't know how they do this. Like, I don't understand how the Secret Service and the security approach when you're going into Madison Square Garden is going to be, because it's official. Donald Trump is going to game three. So, like, I was just reading this thing. You know, Putin is doing this economic speech in Russia, and anybody who is allowed to attend, and, you know, it's pretty selective is how you get in, Not only are you going through security and you can't have any metal or anything of that nature on yourself, you have to take a COVID test and some other like health tests in order to get into the room. Nuts. I don't know how hard it would be to get through security to get into Madison Square Garden Monday night. That's going to be crazy.
I'm betting it's next to impossible or multiple levels.
But it seats, what, 18 or 20,000 people?
Yeah, it's not very big.
How do you screen that? That's what...
Well, if it is that small,
Well, you go to FedEx Forum, you get screened.
I
come 2 hours before the game and they screen me.
Yeah.
And they know I'm coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm screened. So, but that's like walking, you know, you walk through that machine that just sees if you've got any metal on you, I guess, gunpowder. I don't even know how that truthfully totally works. And then they're going to screen my bag, which, you know, in this day and age, that's appropriate. I have no problem with that. But when you've got a guy who's – how many times have they attempted to assassinate Donald Trump at this point?
It's been a handful.
I mean, I give him credit for wanting to go.
He's a sports guy.
He is a sports guy. There's no question. He's a football guy.
Yes.
But I don't blame him for wanting to go. I would like to go to game three. I would particularly like to go to game three if the series is tied.
Oh, yeah.
All right, last thing. The Memorial. Man, Jack's got that set up perfectly. It's tough. If you make the right shots, you can play really well. Let me tell you who's doing that. Have you ever heard of Ryan Gerard before?
I feel like you're about to tell me about him.
It's not like he's not been around. I think he's 30th in the FedEx Cup. I think he's ranked 36th in the world. He's been around. He's 26 years old. He's from Raleigh. He went to North Carolina, I think. He's 3 under today. He's got a three-stroke lead. He's 8 under through 11. There's some great stories that are coming out here. Wyndham Clark, he wasn't even eligible for signature events until he won 2 weeks ago. That got him into this thing. He had a great start. He's 5 under from yesterday. J.J. Spaun, defending U.S. Open champion. He's playing like a champ. This is like the third week in a row now that J.J. is starting to really play good golf. He's at 5 under. Tommy Fleetwood, finally getting his act together. He's at 5 under. The Fleetwood, Clark, Spaun, they have not teed off yet. Nick Taylor from Canada had a good day. He was 4 under. He has not teed off yet. Patrick Cantlay would be next at 3 under. He's 1 under through 6. Scotty Scheffler, 1 over. Have you heard any of the audio or read it? He hits on 16. It's a par 3. He hits what he thinks is a flushed shot that is going to be close to the pin. The wind blows the ball into the water. Scotty Scheffler is livid.
Goes off on his caddy.
Goes off on his caddy. This is Scotty Scheffler. I missed her easygoing, accepting all the blame for himself, never pointing fingers at anybody else. Man, that was uncharacteristic that I know of. And it was interesting because I think it was Kurt Byram on the broadcast who said, you know, sometimes caddies just have to learn how to take shrapnel. And that's what Scotty was giving out to him yesterday. It's interesting. He's not out of it. He's 1 over. But at this point, that is 9 strokes behind Ryan Gerard, who's now through 12. So he's only got 6 holes left. I'll be shocked if he does not have the lead or a part of the lead by the end of this day. We'll keep our eye on that. So that's really what is going on in the world of sports. On the show today, we've got a little bit more. Jonah Dillon wrote a good story after Ed Scott broke the story that the Tigers are going full rev share. We're going to get into that with the Tigers football beat writer in our final segment of the day. As I sit here in the Family Leisure Studios, I remind you, the above ground pools at the Ultimate Pool Party are on special price. I'm saying you can get an above-ground pool for under $4,000. The in-ground pools, they've started to do that again. State of the art. You know that's an investment. This is under $50,000 for the best products around. It's a deal. If you get to I-40 in Witten Road, all in-stock patio furniture, price to move, free umbrella and base with any of the select patio furniture sets, including five pieces that started under $1,000, and those beautiful outdoor sectionals, newest fabrics, newest designs, under $1,300. Mention us, you get $200 off any pool or spa purchase. And this portion of the show brought to you by one of my favorite golf courses in the world. That's Miramichi. It's a public golf course, but when you go out there, you'll feel you're like a, you'll think you're like at a country club. They do have memberships, by the way. In fact, members have their own spot on the driving range, the biggest driving range. It's got the sand trap place to learn how to hit out of sand. It's got a chipping area. It's got a big putting green. If you want to learn the game, the best place to go would be Miramichi. You want to play a tough golf course, the best place to go, Miramichi. You want to play a beautiful golf course, the best place to go, Miramichi. I'm telling you, you can play over 7,000 yards. You can play it around 6,000 yards. You've got your choice. You can play it shorter than that if you'd like to. They've got forward tees. All you got to do is get to Woodstock, not Millington, 25 minutes from my driveway in East Memphis. It's the complete golf experience, from the practice facilities to the clubhouse to the deck on top of 9 and 18 with the best view in Shelby County. I'm telling you, Miramichi, it's the complete golf experience. We take a break. We're going to Chicago. Our friend from Priority Sports, Andy Schiffman, our agent, is coming your way next.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
We're going to head to Chicago. We're going to talk NBA with our expert. That would be our agent from Priority Sports, Andy Schiffman. I want to start, though, because Brandon Clark was a part of the Priority Sports family. I know there is going to be a memorial. I want to say, Andy, is it in Arizona? Give me your thoughts on this memorial as we have one final farewell for former Grizz Brandon Clark. Good morning.
Sure. Well, the service, the celebration of life for Brandon will be tomorrow in Phoenix. So I'm flying out there this afternoon along with Mark and a couple other people on our staff. Mark is speaking along with Zach Kleiman and some other members of the Grizzlies organization. And potentially, I think one of maybe the Gonzaga coaches as well, where BC went to college. So it'll be out in Phoenix. That was kind of his home base for a long time before he moved around. And I know his mom is from that area and spent a lot of time there as well. So it will be a very difficult time tomorrow, but I do think it will be very therapeutic, especially for his family, seeing everyone in BC's life that played a role, whether large or small, there in one room, hopefully telling fond memories of Brandon and stories that probably a lot of people don't even know. It'll be a tough day to get through, but I think that the impact that BC had will be reflected on who shows up around the world of basketball and just people in general. And I know a lot of people have reached out to me asking how they could attend and watch, but it's through the family only. It's pretty exclusive to people associated with Brandon or the team or his family.
And no video stream of that?
To those people who could not make it in person but got this invitation, it is available online. I just wouldn't be privy to share the link or anything like that.
Sure. It was, and I mentioned this earlier, amazing to me the outpouring of a feeling that this city had for Brandon Clark he was here for quite a bit. Did not play much the last couple of years, but it was beyond what he did on the court. It was more the sense off the court. And I felt the outpouring of teammates and former teammates, because let's face it, a lot of those guys that were playing with him are now departed. But the sense that you got of love and respect and admiration for Brandon was overwhelming, I thought. I did not expect to see some of the things that I saw, and yet they came. So he will be a life well remembered.
Absolutely. And I talked about it when we spoke last week. He was so humble. You know, he never did anything for show. And we live in a world of professional sports, right, where you, especially with social media, a lot of athletes want to almost prove that they're working by posting things on social media. And the guy never really did that. He never had any need to sit there and prove to others who didn't know him what he was doing behind the scenes. And he always took his job so seriously. He took his work so seriously. He took his teammates so seriously. He would give anyone a shirt off his back. And I think a lot of those stories will be elaborated on tomorrow. And one of the speakers will be a member of the Grizzlies training staff, which you might scratch your head at, but think about how much time,
sure,
probably on a pretty,
the last
pretty
two years,
personal level, exactly, those two individuals spent together. And so I don't want to say I'm eager or interested, but I will say I'm eager or interested to hear some of the stories that he tells, because I think a lot of people in that room probably will not be privy to it. And, you know, again, it's just, you're talking about one of the sweetest guys ever to walk the face of the earth, from a great family, and you saw it in Memphis, right? Always caring, always stopping for fans and smiling. And he just, it was never really like a chore for him or an obligation for him to do any of that. And even when he was here in Chicago, we recruited him out of Gonzaga. He was here training for the draft. He was in a great draft class. Ty Jerome was in that class, some other players who are now overseas. And as quiet as Brandon was, when obviously this news happened and some of these players really hadn't interacted or spoken to Brandon in years, all of them reached out and were telling me stories and were posting pictures as if it was like their best friend. So that just kind of shows you the level of impact that he had in people's lives.
I am sure it will be a moving, memorable moment tomorrow. And I'm hoping that it provides some form of closure and peace to the Clark family. I really do.
I appreciate it.
Let's move to the NBA Finals, Game 2 tonight. Obviously, a must-win for San Antonio. I guess my first question to you would be, Becky Hammon, Draymond Green, they say a 6'2 guy can't lead a team to the NBA title. Jalen Brunson...
he's not 6'2, first off.
he's listed at 6'2. Is he, 6 feet, maybe? He's saying, yes, you can. I mean, 13 of his 30 in the fourth quarter, although he was not efficient, as I mentioned earlier, 31 shots to get 30 points, that's a lot. But nonetheless, when they had to have him, he made him. He's amazing. Some of the things that he does in clutch times in these postseason games remind me of one guy named Michael Jordan, who, by the way, was a legit 6'5", and we know that that can win titles. Do you think a small guy like that, contrary to what Hammond and Green have to say, do you think they can win this championship with him at the helm?
Oh, there's no doubt, and it has nothing to do with his stature. You look at this team. He's the leader of the team. He puts the team on his back. And to your point, what he did coming off of these little injuries he sustained in game one, like I said, putting the team on his back, making plays. But again, it's not just Jalen Brunson. You had an outstanding game from Josh Hart. He only had 3 points, Dave.
I know.
But 15 rebounds for a guard.
And a nuisance on defense,
steals.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's everywhere. He's just a ball hawk on the offensive glass. At least he was in game one. Landry Shamet still shooting the ball well. Come off the bench again, 13 points. But just defensively, how good the Knicks are, they just kept getting better as the game went on. But I think the number that was really glaring for me that stood out in such a favorable way for the Knicks, and You're not going to lose many games when you're protecting the ball like this. 8 turnovers. I think they had 1 turnover in the second half. Something crazy like that.
Yeah.
So think about where that game was at the beginning in San Antonio. The crowd was amped. Wemby was amped. Jalen Brunson was out here and there sporadically with these little injuries he's sustained, like I said. And where do the Knicks go? What happened? I think just Jalen's presence out there ignited them, ignited the bench. And we can't forget about, obviously, Cat, who had a great game and played really well all around. Just his presence out there as well. I mean, Anunoby keeps getting healthier. I was there in New York against Cleveland in game one and two, and he really was a shell of himself in game one. But again, just kept getting more comfortable coming off these injuries, kept getting better. So, like, I think the Knicks are poised to win this series. And I'll even say, again, it's a little bit Monday morning quarterback, but, like, it's not out of the question they can just sweep the Spurs. They think about what they've been doing in this playoffs and how good they are, and they just overcame a huge deficit on hostile territory with Jalen Brunson being out for a portion of the game against arguably an MVP candidate. You think about Jalen Brunson doesn't really get much talk for an MVP candidate each year. Behind the likes of Joker, Shea, obviously, and Wemby.
He's like fifth or sixth this year, right?
Exactly. And you look at what he's doing. You know, against a guy like Wemby, who you can see what Wemby does to deter the offense anytime he's within 10 to 12 feet of the basket. No one is even looking at the rim. So it's pretty incredible what the Knicks are doing. I tend to think it could continue tonight. What's crazy to me, though, is just how they're shooting the ball. And typically you see these teams get hot and kind of fade out at some point. That hasn't happened with the Knicks, which is crazy to me. I think about how good the Spurs are with, obviously, Capps is the stud. He's proven that now. I think he was kind of a bright spot in a relatively weak draft when he was a rookie a couple of years ago, but he's absolutely proven to be worthy of that top pick behind Richardson, of course, but he's the bright spot out of that draft class, and it's amplified now with Wemby. And the fact that the Knicks did what they did against them in San Antonio, I mean, maybe the Spurs can get this one. I don't see the Spurs winning a game in the Garden. That's just me.
They stole home court advantage. They're clearly now the favorites. I would be shocked if there was a sweep. I still think San Antonio can get back in this. I don't know. They obviously would have to win one game in New York City. I think they could, depending on what we see tonight with a response. I mean, Obviously, this is must win. Wemby's got to be a lot better. He's got to be more physical. He's got to stay more inside. And they've got to play Dylan Harper a lot more than they did.
Yep, Dylan Harper.
And they got to take De'Aaron Fox, in my estimation, out of the starting lineup because he's not 100%.
Well, he's not 100%. I mean, Harper still played, he played 27 minutes, was great. I mean, he hit such big-time shots for them the other night. So I agree with that assessment. I think with the Spurs, though, it would really behoove them to somehow get Cat in foul trouble. If they can pick up, like, 2 to 3 fouls on him in the first half, that'll limit him in the second half. I think there are a lot of times where you could have blown the whistle on him the other night and he didn't. He ended up with 4 fouls. But I think if the Spurs can get Cat in foul trouble where he has to sit, then you're bringing in Mitchell Robinson. I mean, any time the Spurs need to get the ball back, they're just going to pack a Robinson. You've seen that throughout the playoffs, right? So I think that could be a really good strategy for them if they're able to do it. I'm not saying they'll be able to, but I'm with you. I mean, I think the Spurs are a great team, but in the playoffs, you can't have 7 points, 3 of 13 shooting from the box, and even Vassell, 4 of 11 shooting, 1 for 6 from 3. So you got two of your starters playing almost 40 minutes a game collectively, going 7 for 24 shooting, 1 for 10 from 3. That can't happen. And then besides Dylan Harper off the bench, you got nothing.
By the way, the Spurs are the favorites in this game tonight. By how many do you think?
I'm going to go with about 6 or 7.
Wow, that is incredible. 6.5.
All right, there you go.
I think the Spurs are going to win the game. I don't know if it'd be 6.5. I think if I were betting, I'd go the other
way. I think
it'll
be close. Yeah, I'm with you. Look, the Spurs could win. They're going to have the crowd behind them. As you said, it's a must win. But I've seen the Knicks in games like this before, and they take it down to the wire or they end up winning it. So I could not be. This is one of the most exciting NBA finals I think we've seen in a really long time. Not just because it's two new teams, but I think everyone that's a basketball fan, correct me if I'm wrong, loves to watch Wemby. How could you not love to watch
him? Well, there's
stars. He's so unique.
There's stars across the board here. That's
and
why.
Yeah, and the Knicks are just kind of as hard as they play. And like I said, it's not just Brunson. I mean, he's capable of putting the team on his back and just going off.
Right.
But watching Cat, watching Josh Hart, watching Bridges, I have Miles McBride. Ananobi. We got some big stuff. Ananobi. I mean, it's all around. They're just a fun team to watch. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of me just as a basketball fan that wants to root for them because it's New York City. But being objective, we have players on both teams. I just want to see this thing. I just love watching competitive games. Look, I'd love to see a seven-game series. I don't think we're going to see that, but I would just love to see it as a basketball fan.
I would love to see a seven-game series myself. And at this point, I think for the Spurs to win, it would have to go to seven. So we shall see. Game three. What a circus that's going to be in Madison Square Garden. Trump
will be there.
Is coming.
Ben Stiller's going to be there.
Who?
Said Ben Stiller will be there.
Oh, yeah. Ben Stiller. You know, I like Ben Stiller. And I give Ben Stiller a lot of credit. He's like Spike Lee. He's been going to those games forever.
Yeah. Ben Stiller, Chalamet, Tracy Morgan.
Chalamet is, come on now. He's a Johnny come lately. He's cashing in on the Knicks. Here's what I was asking Landon Schmidt earlier. Like, how do you set up security for this deal with the president being in that arena? Like, does Secret Service get more involved? Like, when the screening is, when the folks are coming in? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, they definitely have a secret, accessible tunnel, which he will take. I mean, I know this for a fact of MSG. That's what the celebrities do and all the actors. Actually, there's two exclusive ways in if you're like an A-lister like that. One is even more exclusive than the previous one. I'm sure Trump will be in that one. And you have no access to the public whatsoever. Where the cars come into the garden and the path that he'll take to walk out to wherever he's sitting, I'm sure, on the court. I'm interested to see what will, you know, who's going to be sitting around him. How are they going to manage that?
Won't they put him in a box? Wouldn't he be in a suite?
You would imagine so. You'd imagine so. You know, and like, people are going to figure out where he is and like, what is that setup going to be like? Are they going to allow? You think about it, like those boxes, they're obviously like open air, and then you got fans sitting in their normal seats directly below the box. So I don't know how that's going to go. I was at a Bulls game years and years ago when Obama was there as the president, and he came and sat courtside. So, whatever that means.
Well, there weren't as many assassination attempts on him as there have been on Trump. I think Donald's got a lot of courage to even go to these things, but he's a big sports guy, as we mentioned earlier. All right, last thing, real quick. Draft coming up. I just saw the newest mock draft. I'm not sure I agree with these ratings, but the way they have the guards, the kid from Illinois, Wagler, is the highest rated of the guards. Acuff 2, Fleming's 3, Brown 4, the kid from Arizona Berries. What would that be, 5th? You agree with that lineup?
I think it's all in the eye of the beholder in terms of these guards. I love Peyton Wagler. He's very young, got huge upside. He's really, really good. For me, I'm a huge Kingston Fleming fan, specifically because I would bet on any player coming out of a Kelvin Sampson coach team all day, every day, just from the toughness, the defensive mindset, and I've watched a lot of Houston. So I love him. But then you can also say, all right, well, you want an offensive exploder in Darius Acuff from Arkansas. Like, he's proven throughout the season how good he is. So really, I think it's just it's whatever the acquired taste is, given what you've seen in your gym, being exposed to these players at the combine and sitting down with them and interviewing them. I mean, every team is going to have a different order. I think any one of those players you just mentioned, I don't necessarily know if I think Barry's quite up there, but he is very good. I'm talking about mostly like Acuff, Vogler, and Fleming. Any one of those guys, I don't think you can go wrong. Now, we need a crystal ball to look up six, seven, 8 years from now to determine who's going to be in the league, a starter, a rotational player, an all-star, et cetera. But I think all of those players, Dave, have shown enough of a sample size this season and have the upside that teams picking in that range like, that I don't think you can go wrong. Now, again, down the road, you might look back and say, oh, man, we really missed on him. But I don't think there's a bad decision if you're picking a guard and you're picking from one of those players.
He's Andy Schiffman. He is our agent in Chicago. Safe travels to Phoenix, my friend. I'm going to be off the next 2 weeks, but I know you'll be joining Landon Schmidt. We appreciate your participation on this show.
Thanks, Dave.
You got it. That's Andy Schiffman, brought to you by Shell Dunn. Whether you're competing on a golf course, a baseball diamond, the gridiron, the hardwood, like Andy loves so much, golf is really the sport for Sheldon, although he's terrible at it. But if you follow the competition, you know what Sheldon says? You're always behind. Sheldon Rosengarten, Mark Spensdorf, who, by the way, is, as I mentioned, just can't play golf because he can't practice because he's always working for you, tells people selling a home is exactly like competition you face in sports. If you don't have a good coach, if you don't have good guidance and a strategic plan that you execute, you'll head to the locker rooms as a loser while others get to the closing table selling for better money. And steady interest rates are here. There's a lot of activity in the market, so the inventory has increased. It's even more important to get into the game in the best position as it starts. You want to know how to beat your competition and get a better price and sell quicker? Call my guy. That's Shell Dunn Rosengarten when you want the job done. 483-0546 or MemphisRelocate.com. We're relocating downtown in a minute. The beat writer from the commercial appeal on Tigers football, that's Jonah Dillon, and he's next.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255. Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
We always close our week with Jonah Dillon. He's brought to you by Landers Cadillac of Memphis. I just saw Kent Ritchie the other day. I was asking, how is the car business going? He goes, you know, even with the high gas prices and everything else, the car business is really doing well. I get that. That's because Landers knows exactly what they're doing. You're always going to get the best price. You're always going to get the top dollar for your trade-ins. You can save even more if you get the Landers Easy Pass. You do that with us by going to at CadillacofMemphis.com. You're always going to get the standard, too. The standard when it comes to automobiles is Cadillac. They say that. Cadillac is what you want to be. That's why we always call Jonah Dillon the Cadillac of beat writers when it comes to football. The best place to go get a car is Landers Cadillac. The best prices, Landers Cadillac. And remember, if it doesn't say Landers, you paid too much. We go downtown. Our friend Jonah Dillon joins us now. Were you surprised when the news broke earlier this week that Memphis, one of two schools in the group of six, is going full rev share? And it's an amazing feat in my mind. 2 years ago when Dr. Ed Scott came in, there was no rev share. Suddenly, somehow, he's figured out a way to get $21.3 million for the next couple of years per year to give to student athletes. He says it's not sustainable. I can believe that. They're doing this to try to get into the Power Four. But it's a pretty amazing accomplishment. Your thoughts. Good morning.
Yeah, definitely the timing of it, getting in. I mean, like you said, this is only the second year of the revenue sharing era of college athletics. And it's kind of been obviously a goal really for every team, every school that isn't at full rev share. Can we get there? A lot of schools are not going to be able to. They know they're not even close. And that's why you see the minimum investment with the American Conference, stuff like that, where you're expecting schools to, you know, have three or 3.5, something like that, million a year. So getting to full rev share is a really big moment for Memphis. And like you said, it sets up a really, really important next couple of years for the entire athletic department when you look at the future of what this school is going to be in conference realignment. Because now you're kind of pushing the chips in and saying, we're going to invest a lot over the next couple of years. We're going to go to donors, and they've done it, and tell them, look, we need this money. We need it now so that we can perform at a certain level. But we're going to use this, hopefully, to get to a power conference, and if we don't, I don't know how long, even what Ed Scott said, I don't know how long this is going to be sustainable. And so, yeah, it was definitely surprising in the sense that it now sets up this really specific era, I think, of Memphis athletics of needing to maximize everything over the next couple of years to hopefully get where you want to be.
I was amazed, and you pointed this out. We know South Florida's in this just like we are to try to get into the Power Four. I think that kind of linked up with one another. Everybody said Tulane was in that mix, but I don't know that Tulane is really making the push financially with rev share like the University of Memphis is. But then you take a look and you compare Memphis basketball at $9 million. I know football at $7 million at the moment, but he made the comment that's all fiscal year budget wise. That's going to go up to $10 million or so. UAB's total budget with NIL money or rev share is $5 million, and those are numbers that are really more like the American than the other two. It's surprising the differences now in that league.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically, and that's kind of what Ed Scott was saying. And if you look at the league, and again, going back to the minimum investment thing that Tim Pernetti put into motion a couple of years ago, like the reason is because that's where they wanted those conferences, those teams to be in the conference. And so the $9 million for one team, for Memphis basketball, that's more than other teams in this, other schools in this conference are spending on their entire athletic department
right.
for rev share.
That's almost and double UAB's total budget, right.
Yeah, it sets you up if you're Memphis to just be and specific. You know, basketball specifically, football is a little bit different. Basketball specifically, it sets you up not only to be ahead of everyone, but to be way ahead of everyone when you look at this conference and way ahead of most of the schools that are at this level. You're talking about multiples of how much money those teams are spending versus how much Memphis is spending.
Were you surprised $9 million, which is actually a couple of million more on paper here to begin with than football? I don't know that we know Kentucky just spent $6 million on one guy. Well, you know, we know they spent over $20 million last year. They didn't get much out of it, but they had that money to spend. But how many schools, even in some Power Four instances, are spending $9 million on basketball?
Well, I think a lot of schools at the Power Conference level are spending more than that. They're just not spending the rev share money up to the cap on it mm-hmm. because most schools, and that's why Memphis is going to be unique, most schools are spending the majority of that money on football in terms of the cap. So if you're talking about this year up to $20.5 million, the expectation is most schools spent about $13 or $14 million on football. And again, the cost of these rosters overall, that's not the whole cost of the roster. In terms of how much they're actually spending, right? You're talking about these $40, $50 million football rosters. It's coming from other places, and the same for basketball, too. And so the $9 million, again, is a lot. It might be more than those other schools are spending of their $20.5 million cap on basketball, but those rosters are obviously way more expensive. We talked about $20 million rosters, things like that. I don't think, and it's hard to kind of parse it out because it's a little bit complicated in terms of how the money comes together. But yeah, those schools are gonna spend a lot on basketball. Again, at the American Conference level, it's way more than everyone else's because they're not even close to the cap overall, or obviously at that number for any program.
Well, and let's point out there is a difference. You're talking about the cap on the rev share, which you know Memphis is going full to that cap, but that does not include additional funds that can be had by players through NIL. I don't know where Memphis stands on that particular instance. You know, we have the sports commission that's supposed to set market price, and I don't know how effective they're going to be. We're going to have to wait for the Sports Act to actually get passed, which I think has a chance, but that's a discussion for another day. But that rev share is $9 million. Actually, the budget could get bigger for basketball or for football through NIL opportunities, correct?
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the things Ed Scott was talking about. He's talking about rev share money, guaranteed rev share. He's not talking about NIL stuff. Now, and that's if players are in commercials or on billboards or things like that. And
right.
So there is reason to believe that there will be more of that. And now, like you mentioned, if Memphis is at the cap, then you do get into the clearinghouse stuff for those types of deals, which was not really a thing before for Memphis because they weren't at the cap. So they could just use all the money that they needed under the cap. Obviously, like you said, the clearinghouse and those things gets me to a whole other realm of complicated, you know, legalese and all that, and we'll save that for another day. But it is a thing now for Memphis where, yes, you could spend that much money. You could have more money going to the program beyond that through NIL deals.
And the other thing that Ed admitted, now they got the money in place. But they got to win. You know, they went from five conference championships the year before to last year where football fell at the end, basketball had its worst year in 50 years. They had only one conference championship, down from five. Just so you know, USF had six. How about this? Rice had five. Tulsa had four. UTSA had three in your own league. That's got to be better to get the attention of the ACC or the Big 12 in 28 through 30, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's, and again, that's one of the things, and I wrote an article about this, I put this in there. Ed Scott talked about it as introductory press conference, why it's important to improve those non-revenue sports is because some of these leagues that you're trying to join, he particularly said the ACC, are really good in that department, and they don't want an entire athletic department if their teams in every sport are going to be near the bottom of the conference, right? Because that's not a good look for anybody. And so I think for a lot of those programs, you know, you want to be competing at the top of the American Conference, especially when, look, the discrepancy isn't as big in other sports and it doesn't have as big of an impact financially on a sport like soccer, the money necessarily, because of the way the recruiting works and all that stuff. But at the same time, everybody in this conference knows now that Memphis is at a certain level in terms of finances for its athletic department. And I think the expectation would be that Memphis is going to be competitive in most sports, right? And so I think turning some of those things around and making the entire athletic department win a lot of games, obviously football and men's basketball have to lead the way. But I think it's important for everybody to go into next season. It's really critical to be successful kind of across the board.
Baseball's got to get better. Softball's got to get better. Volleyball's got to get better. Both soccer teams are pretty strong. The women, we know, are great. But all of those, if you want to be attractive to that next power league, besides just what your stadiums look like and what your revenue streams may be, you know, you've got to be competitive, in somewhat competitive anyway, in all sports.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That, you know, these conferences, they're not looking for one team. They're looking for their entire athletic department. And financially, they want to make it worth their while. And so even if you look at teams, I mean, a lot of the teams, if you look at, think about power conference teams that struggle a lot of time in men's basketball and in football, a lot of them are really successful in other sports. And I'm talking about teams that win national championships, right? And so that's the thing for Memphis is you would expect, if Memphis was in a power conference, I think you would still expect football and men's basketball to be competitive. But those conferences are going to want everyone to be competitive too at every sport. And they're going to want to add a team that comes in and is immediately competing at the top of the conference or near the top of the conference and improves the league as a whole. And that's what you're seeing with the additions that we've seen, I think, across conference realignment. And that's going to be a big thing for Memphis too.
He's Jonah Dillon from the Commercial Appeal. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That is Jonah Dillon, brought to you in part by Southern Security. Whether you're a small business owner, maybe you're buying your first home, Southern Security could be your trusted financial partner. They've been the best, absolute best when it comes to all the credit unions in the city of Memphis, voted by all the folks for the last 6 years. They can do things other banks can't. They're a not-for-profit. And they've got seven locations, a brand new one in Collierville with all the latest in technology, always the best rates I mentioned, and then, of course, service. That's why they've been voted the very best. They are outstanding. And you can join so easily. Go to southernsecurity.org, or you can call and talk to a human being, a member of the service team at 901-452-7900. Southern Security. Your home team credit union, federally insured by NCUA. That does our week. I'm going to be gone for the next couple of weeks. Landon Schmidt has the reins of this show in his hands. I'll talk to you in a couple of Mondays. Johnny Radio's next. Have a great weekend, everyone.